Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here today for another great author chat, this time with Julie Tu, the author of The Donut Trap. We are recording in the early hours of the first week of December, which means Rira is in the middle of her marathon BTS experience.
Yes. I kind of hate the fact that it was during Thanksgiving week. I'm like, why? There's just so much on my plate right now. But I was actually really worried that I wouldn't be able to talk a lot in this episode because I screamed a lot, I sang a lot, and I was just like, Marvin, you have to take the lead because I might not have my voice tomorrow.
Yeah, you've already been to two of the nights.
Yeah, and I'm going tomorrow. So three out of the 4 days.
Wow.
Yes. I'm sorry for those who follow me on Twitter. Like, I know that many of you follow me for book news and like bookish content, but it's just been all BTS for the last like 2 weeks. And I apologize for that.
You know, I mean, BTS is only here, what, once
like,
a year?
Like, listen, I waited 2 years because their tour got canceled. And yeah, like, I struggled to get those tickets. And you know what? Actually, I'm not going to apologize for my Twitter content because it's my personal account. I can do whatever the hell I want.
Well, I'm glad you're here with us intact.
It's funny that you mentioned BTS because BTS is mentioned a couple times in the Donut Trap.
I mean, they are ubiquitous right now.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you're here with us. Voice intact for this amazing chat with Julie too. The Donut Trap is an adult, I guess, rom-com, coming-of-age, slice-of-life story about a girl trapped working at her parents' donut shop after graduating college with no direction in life. You know, kind of that post-college ennui that we all experience, or maybe not all of us.
A lot of us.
A lot of us experience.
A lot of us.
Taking place in the SGV, which I love because it is where I grew up. And yeah, we had a really great chat with Julie about her inspirations, about the themes of her book, and about how she became an author.
Yes, so without further ado, here is our chat with Julie Tu.
And we are here with Julie Tu, the author of The Donut Trap, which is the debut adult rom-com novel. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are chatting with her in the morning, which is usually when we usually chat with East Coast authors. But no, she is here with us in the SGV. We're just here really early in the morning.
Yeah. You're one of the few SGV authors that we've talked to. So Marvin probably has a lot of comments about that.
Well, Rira is also an SGV transplant, so.
That's
we're
true,
all here
but
in the
I'm
valley.
Not. I'm not a native, though, so that's very, very different from your experiences. But before we start, just like an icebreaker, what is your favorite donut?
What my favorite donut is a French cruller, which actually is not always available, and so sometimes I have to like find the right store, get there in the morning to get one.
Wow, that's dedication. How about you, Marvin?
I like a good regular glazed donut.
You're such an old man. My favorite donut is like the seasonal strawberry donut from the Donut Man all the way in Glendora. Like my friends and I would like say like, hey, it's 9 o'clock. I really want donuts. Let's drive like 45 minutes just to get this one specific donut because I am so picky. But yeah, that's why I was like really excited to read your book once we announced the book deal. I was like, damn, like a story about a donut store, like about like the post-college Inuit experience. Because yeah, I like totally related to a lot of Jasmine's struggles. So,
like, yeah, definitely. I, as someone who is probably a good 10 years past my post-college ennui, I definitely still related to the just that unique moment after college when like our entire lives has been dedicated to school. And then we realize, well, we're done with school. Now what?
Yeah.
Well, like I'm in my 30s now and I was just like, why do I still relate to Jasmine? Shouldn't I like have my life together at this point? But I don't. So.
No, I still feel that way too. And so sometimes when people have asked me like, oh, well, why did you decide to write like a coming of age story for like an adult character? I'm like, well, I still don't know what I want to do. I think there's always going to be times in our lives where we feel that way. So it shouldn't just be limited to like a teenage time frame.
Yeah, definitely. I love the fact that this is an adult book because I feel like so many coming of age stories are just reserved for young adults. And it's just a little bit frustrating sometimes because, that like struggle to like figure out who you are and what you want in life, what your passion is, and second guessing your decisions. It's also like very much part of being like an adult. And I just love how you were able to weave all of those experiences into your narrative. I know that this is technically a rom-com, but I was like, man, this is like a slice of life that serves a lot of deep themes. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also just such a like, The Asian Americanness of this narrative is also was something that we really related to, right? Because there's just something unique about like growing up, especially as the children of immigrants, where you're kind of torn between the values of both your parents' culture and also this American culture that you grew up in that values independence, and how that creates a perfect hurricane or maelstrom or whatever of just what are we supposed to be, right? Like, how do we be full-fledged adults and independent people while also being who our parents want us to be?
Yeah, for sure. And I think something that's really interesting when I've read, I try not to read reviews, but I have come across like different reader responses. And, you know, I do feel like for some readers that don't have that kind of experience, like they really just don't understand why Jasmine struggles so much to want, like they almost frame it as like wanting to honor or be loyal to their family. I'm like, well, it's not really that. It's like, you know, when we grow up in a certain culture with certain expectations, like we subscribe to it to a certain extent. Like, you know, that's what we expect of ourselves sometimes, right? And so it's not so much like I want to honor my parents necessarily, but also just like, well, this is something I want too, right? And I've had conversations with like family and friends where we're like, yeah, we subscribe to it, like we want to like fit in, you know, in our family, but also like pursue these other things that might also, you know, bring some tension, right? And so anyway, so yeah, that's, I wanted to kind of pull that experience into the book.
I just realized that we just jumped into the conversation without like me asking you like, hey, there are listeners who have not read your book yet, so can you like describe your book for them?
Yes. Yeah, so the Donut Trap follows 22-year-old Jasmine Tran, who's been living at home after college. She's single, she's unemployed, and she reunites with a former college crush who reemerges into her life just as her family's donut shop faces an increase in rent. And so she's kind of, we find her juggling between like trying to manage her love life while also managing like her family responsibilities, while also trying to figure out what she wants to do with her next step in her career, even though she doesn't know what that is. And so that's basically what the book is about. It is a slice of life kind of story. I really wanted it to feel like you jump right into her, you get this window into her life and like the day-to-day kind of conversations that she has with her family, with her friends. And so yeah, so it has a strong coming of age theme and also a rom-com arc with Alex, which is her love interest. So
yeah, a lot of paragraphs spent describing his abs, which
I truly appreciated. Yes.
I do want to say I love something that jumped out to me as SGV boy, I guess, is I love that you've canonized the correct way to say 99 Ranch as 99 Ranch and not the, you know, the heretical Ranch 99.
I mean, these are like SoCal, like, you know, like we want to get the culture right. Right. So
exactly.
I mean, if I know that if this was, you know, set in the Bay Area or whatever, it would be Ranch 99.
No, still 99 Ranch. I don't care what they say.
But yeah. I've read that your family used to run a donut shop. So you drew a lot of personal experiences from working at your family shop.
Yeah. So one thing that was really exciting for me in writing this book was being able to highlight like a little bit of history about like Cambodian donut shops into this story, because, you know, that's part of my family history as well. Right. And so, you know, we're ethnically Chinese, but my parents are Cambodian refugees. And so, you know, their network of friends and acquaintances, like all began to start to operate their own independent donut shop in around Southern California. And at some point my parents were able to operate one on their own, you know, with our family assistance and relatives and all of that, being able to support us and all of that. And so they were able to do that for a number of years, like mainly during my formative years. But we did end up, they did end up switching to a different business after that, which was an ice cream shop. So always around desserts in my childhood, but yeah. So yeah, being able to highlight some of that history of like refugees, their place in, you know, why it is so ubiquitous that there are Cambodian operated donut shops in Southern California was something that I was really excited to bring into the book.
I think for a lot of Asian American immigrant communities, I mean, it is really a community, because once you come here, like if you don't find like a safety net, if you don't find people who speak your language and is able to help you, it's so difficult to survive. And like, I think a lot of like, I think a lot of people who don't understand this, they just love to stereotype Asian Americans being like, oh yeah, like, all Chinese immigrants open restaurants and all Koreans open up dry cleaners and liquor stores. That's just what they do. And it's like, no, they do it because there is like they need to make money and their community is able to provide like the easiest way, like shortcuts and guidelines. And yeah, I just love that you highlighted the like Cambodian Chinese history of opening donut shops and like why it's like so crucial to surviving.
Yeah. And so it was a really fun project to be able to kind of reminisce and bring in some of that personal experience, and not just drawing from my own experience, but like I had to ask my sisters because they actually spent more time in the shop than me. And then also like, you know, my cousins, like so many relatives, like just being able to pull like different things that they've experienced and to be able to include some of that into this book was really nice.
Yeah. I also love that your story centers on a Chinese diaspora main character whose family is from Cambodia by way of Vietnam and Thailand, mm-hmm. right? Like there's a whole history of that refugee experience in that family that I think a lot of people, most people probably aren't familiar with. That was really cool. I really enjoyed the perspective of Jasmine as someone who is just okay at one language that her parents speak. And the way you wrote, like, you can't really understand the parents when they're speaking in Khmer or in fluent Chinese sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, that's just real life, I feel like, for me. My parents, like, just speaking from my parents, like, they picked up languages in all the places that they've lived. And they've mastered it enough where they can have conversations weaving in like all those languages in one conversation with their friends. And, you know, and so like, I remember growing up, cause I didn't grow up in like a predominantly like Asian community, but I had enough Asian friends and like, you know, one is like from Hong Kong and one is like from Toisan and like, you know, one's Taiwanese. And so like, even though we all had like somewhat of shared language together, like I remember thinking like there were certain things that I would come up in my mind where I'm like, I think that's a Vietnamese word. And I can't say that with my friends because the way my parents speak at home, like just litter with just all these different languages. And I just remember thinking like, I can't really learn one well because they speak so many different languages. And I think they also thought that Khmer would be my weakest language. And so they gossip a lot in Khmer. But then because they use it so often, like I hear it a lot and I understand more than they think. And I remember catching them one time. I'm like, I know what you're saying. And they were like very spooked by it. But yeah, that's all like I feel like real life. And I knew that was not just like unique to me. Like I knew there was a lot of other people who have similar experiences where like if their families are refugees or you know, I've met like even my husband, he's Chinese Vietnamese. And so their family has like a whole slew of languages that they speak. And so I knew it was not unique to me, but I also felt like it was not represented a lot in media. And so, you know, considering like I put in my family's donut shop and like drew from like history. And I'm like, well, it just seems like logistically, like it makes sense that like that is also a factor in this story, because if your family has come through so many different countries, like that's just part of life, right? And so I really try to keep that perspective as I was writing the story. I'm like, well, what would be normal in this world, right? And those are the things I really wanted to make sure to factor in.
Yeah. I mean, I felt represented in the Alex character, not in the abs department, but in the using my fluent Mandarin to impress parents.
Oh my God. Department.
I've oh my definitely gosh. Probably done that before.
Yeah, no. Whenever my parents have met any friends who speak fairly fluent in whatever their language is, like my parents are always really impressed. And because my parents know so many languages, they were able to cover like a lot of my friends. So like my Vietnamese friends, my Cantonese speaking friends, you know, my Mandarin speaking friends, and then my husband speaks Teochew, which is not a very common language, but my dad knows it. And so the first time he met my dad, like he was like so intimidated. He's like, man, your dad like really grilled me. he knows language better than I do. And so it really impresses my parents. And I thought I just really wanted to kind of pull that into the story too. I try to put a lot into the story, and there were times when I thought, is this too much? Do I need to pull back on something? But yeah.
I love how her mom tells Jasmine, oh, if you only took Chinese classes, you would have found like a nice like Chinese boy. Like you would have had like more prospects for marriage. And it's just so funny to me that Jasmine actually did take Chinese classes in college just for that reason. And I was like, that's so like, I see you, Jasmine. Like you're there for the boys. Like, yeah.
My mom did ask me in college. She's like, haven't you met like somebody like in Chinese class or whatever? And like, seriously, I was like, no one is like looking to match dates with each other in class. They're actually there to learn Chinese, mom.
And or get an easy A, because a lot of people
that already too.
Chinese, well, the Chinese class, get that easy A. Yeah, I mean, she went to UCLA. It shouldn't be that hard to find Asian boys at UCLA, right?
Well, like the threshold for a good Asian boy or prospective Asian husband, it depends on your parents' standards. And I just love how like her parents are just so they like pretty much grill Alex, and there's just like so much pressure for him to like meet their expectations, and pretty much like what kind of puts him in a bad light is his mom. It has nothing to do with him as a person. And I think that's like so specific to Asian American culture, because it's like it's just like, oh, what family are they from? And and it's just like, wow, like you are not looking at it from the picture of dating and getting to know someone. You're immediately jumping into like, is this person a marriage candidate? And can we get along with their family? And it's just like, yep, that's super relatable.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think back on my parents, like they were like that even with just friends. Like even when I first met my college roommate, like regardless of their ethnicity, it was just like, oh, who are they? Like, what is their last name? Like, well, what is their background? And I remember asking one of my roommates who was white. She's just like, just tell them I'm white. I'm like, no, that's not good enough for my parents. Like, they want to know, like where your family history is from. And like, she really had to think about that for a second. It's just something that I've grown to expect whenever they meet somebody or they want to know somebody that I'm talking about. They're like, well, who are they? What's their last name? Like, what area are they from? I'm like, oh, okay.
I think as I aged, my parents' standards just went lower and lower and lower. There's a lot of pressure, especially for Asian American women, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think depending on like, your parents' expectations, like how early they put on that pressure, right? there is like a line in the book where Jasmine's mom's like says like, well, you know, if we were back in Cambodia, like you would be married already.
Oh, married with children and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I met my husband in college, so, I didn't have to hear that too much, but I did hear it before. It was just like, you would have been married already. Right now I'm like, okay, well, whatever. Like sometimes I think especially with this story is like the idea of like, well, you know, your parents have all these expectations, but you still have to like live your life a certain, like, you know, the way, not exactly like the way, not like totally like turning your back against your family, but like you still like have to find your way to like manage life day to day, even if there are things you don't agree on or there's other things that you want. And sometimes it's just like coping with like, okay, like I hear you, but like this is what it is to a certain extent, right? It's like it's not happening right now. So
it's difficult to explain all of that when you don't speak the language as fluently as possible, because it's like you can't really, I think in the book Jasmine's like, I want to be able to explain how instead of what. And
yeah,
I was just like, I felt that, because I was like, yeah, like, I mean, communication is key for any relationship, and families are always going to have their issues. They're always going to have like complicated dynamics But it's extremely difficult when you don't share a language and have, I guess, like the tools to communicate. I think that is really, I think that reflects the experience that a lot of Asian Americans face.
I think for some people, they don't really understand that if you've grown up like having the same language with your family, because like, I would say like, even for me personally, like my Mandarin is like very much grade school. And if you think of what a first or second grader, like, like in English, like what they're talking about, it's just like, what's your favorite color? And like, who is your friend? And like, where are you going? It's like very basic surface level conversation. And it's like, how do you explain these like deeper feelings or desires or like worries, right? If you don't have the vocabulary to do that. And it's not even just vocabulary, but like, how do you frame it in a tone and with enough context especially for parents who have like a very different like upbringing, worldview, all of that. And so that's the challenge. And that's what I really wanted to capture in the story, very much also just as, again, like a logistical, like everyday thing that we have to manage, right? It is like a plot point, but it's not like, sometimes when I see reader reviews and they're like, oh, this book is about identity. And I'm like, well, it's not really. I mean, like, the language part is just real life, right? Like, she doesn't like have like, it, like, she's not wondering, like, am I Chinese enough if because I don't have the language skills? It's just like she accepts it, you know, like it's just a part of her life. Right. And so that's kind of my take on that part.
Yeah. As with many children of Asian immigrant stories, one of the central sources of conflict is this relationship with our immigrant parents, right? And their mm-hmm. relationship with us. And what I found really relatable is the parts where all the characters hide things from their parents that they feel like they won't accept or they won't understand. I don't know if it's unique to the Asian immigrant children immigrant experience, but definitely I've also experienced that same like conflict as well, where I'm doing this thing, but I'm not going to tell my parents because I know they're not going to understand.
Yeah.
Or they're not going to understand on like a fundamental, like, why do this level, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have this line where Jasmine's trying to figure out how to improve sales and then sells like a donut for like way more than her parents would ever sell a donut for. And I remember this line where she's thinking, like, my mom's probably thinking of all the things she could probably buy for the price of that donut.
yeah. I had to ask my mom because they operated the shop like over 20 years ago. And she said the price of a dozen donuts when they last like operated the shop was like $3.25.
Oh my God.
For 12 donuts. I was like, oh my God, that's so cheap. Like, that's how much you might spend on one today. So like a fancy one today. And so, when I bought all the donuts for like marketing, like social media and all that, I never told my mom how much they cost. I was like, and it's not so much like we want to lie to our parents, but it's almost like, do I really want to get into this conversation that's like not going to go anywhere? Like, they're just not going to understand. So like, it's basically like, I'm just saving the hassle of like, I'm not going to explain this to you. I'm just going to do this thing that I know would be really important. Right. And there's a really good line from Not Here to Be Liked by Michelle Kwok, where I'm going to paraphrase, but basically where she said, like, lying is part of Asian kids' survival. So I was like, yes, it is. And
definitely a balancing act of like, how truthful can my lie be? And how delicately can I frame this so that they don't blow up? Like, there's definitely a strategy for every single Asian American kid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a mirror to the things it's a mirror to, you know, we're doing for their own good, right? It's the same way that they're being super annoying for our own good, I guess.
And I mean, and I think to just like widen the context, because I know the book focuses on like Jasmine's desire to like get a job or like to date Alex or whatever, but like I just, even from my own personal experience, like remembering how to explain to my parents, like why I have to volunteer for high school, like, and college applications. And my parents, like, just did not understand that concept. They're like, what do you mean you're going to go clean the neighborhood? Like, you don't clean your room. Like, why are you going to go clean the neighborhood? I'm like, I need credit to go to college. Like, this is going to help me get into college. And like, it just did not like click in their minds. Right. And so it's like stuff like that. And so sometimes like those things are really necessary. Right. And we still just kind of have to forge on, even if they don't understand. And so, yeah.
I needed for college was probably the excuse for everything I did. Like why I needed to go to my friend's place for to work on a project, why I needed to go on this trip.
Yes. Yes, yeah. It is very useful, very versatile.
There's a line in your book that really struck me, and I'm just going to read it. It's like, to me, it was yet another unnecessary reminder that my life, my work will always pale in comparison to those of my parents. I knew this very well. It didn't bear repeating. Wasn't that the point, though? Wasn't that the narrative for every immigrant and refugee had come to the United States? To come and build a better, safer life for yourself and your family. If the measure of success was that I was living a more comfortable, easier life than they had, then why was I simultaneously penalized for it? And I was like, oh my God, I felt it so like in my heart because, yeah, like our parents, they like, of course, we understand that they went through so much strife and, you know, they had so many obstacles that like for us, it's like, incomprehensible. We're like, how did you do this at my age? Like, how did you move to another country and learn a new language and just like try to survive and like in this culture that you don't understand? And just having the struggle to understand, like, it's just like, yeah, like my struggles matter too. Like trying to find a job after college, like that is a struggle. And for them, it's just like, what, like when I came to America, I had $20 in my pocket. Like I was able to find a job. Why can't you?
Yeah. And I didn't put this in the book. And I think this is a little bit different than perhaps what some people would expect. But I had relatives who were like, why even bother going to college? Like you can open up your own business and make money right away. And I feel like that's counter to what a stereotypical kind of expectation of what Asian Americans are like, you know, like they, I think a misrepresentation is like, you know, Asian Americans are like, you know, well off or whatever. And they're very, you know, interested in college education and all that. But like, I had lots of relatives who were like, just open your own business. Like you can just like get started right away. Like they didn't really see the return on investment on college. And yeah. And this was even before like all this like college debt stuff was happening. And so I think that's really reflective of like, you know, when I try to really hone in on like when I create characters, like what is their family background? When did they come to the United States? Because all of that kind of factors into their perspectives and worldview. And so I know we've been talking like, you know, broadly about Asian Americans, but you know, of course, there are people who've been in America for like several generations, and they probably some of this stuff probably does not apply. Some of the things that we've talked about today doesn't apply, right? And so, but yeah, in my family, they like there were certain relatives who didn't, you know, understand college, and so so yeah, I just wanted to. But, you know, focusing on, you know, the donut trap and the kind of story that was told here. Yeah, the idea of like having a more comfortable life is also like things like it's just kind of like why, like, it's just like conflicting expectations sometimes. It's like you want us to work really hard, but you also want us to have an easier life. And like there's just sometimes like a conflict. But yeah, like there is a comment in the book where you know her mom comments on like basically like her soft hands and like basically like still like not touched by hard labor. And so And that's not something that, I mean, it is something that I've heard from my own mother, but it's something I've heard from like customers. I remember in my store, there's like, our store was in a community that was like predominantly Latino. And like, I remember like an older, like Mexican, like grandma, like looking at my hands and she's like, look at this hand. So nice and smooth. I'm like, oh, I'm getting it from everybody. So, yeah.
I think the whole, it's like, why are my peers, why are like my old classmates like so successful? And like, they, like, we went to the same school, we're the same age. Like, how could I be such a loser, pretty much? And like, I feel like that's not just Asian Americans' experience. It's a lot of like post college anxiety.
And, yeah.
Like, you definitely.
And social media era.
Yeah. Like, you know? Definitely sure. Captured that, like, fear and aversion to meeting like high school and college friends, because you're like, it's just going to be us complaining about our jobs, but it's just humble bragging and I'm just going to feel bad.
Yeah. It's funny because for that part of the story, I pulled from my day job, which is I'm a college counselor. And so I've heard so many stories from like just that general feeling from students like, oh, but I feel like I'm not doing as well because my friends already have that internship or my friends already landed a job after college and we haven't even finished senior year yet. And like, there's so much comparison. And like, there were so many times I just wanted to tell them, like, it's really going to work itself out. You know, like, everybody's working on their own timeline. Everybody's opportunities are going to come at different times. Everybody comes to their realization about what their next job or career is going to be at different times in their lives too. So it doesn't just happen in college. It happens in different, you know, even later in life, and probably multiple times. And so, but it was such a common feeling. And so I wanted to put that for Jasmine. So in hopes that maybe for readers that they can really like understand, like, oh, okay, I'm not alone. There's plenty of people who feel this way.
I think everyone can relate to the whole, like, I wanna have this job, but it's asking for experience. But how do I get experience if like I don't get a job? Like, I just graduated from college. Like, why is it so hard to just like find a job and make a living? Because all I want to do is move out of my parents' house. Like, my goal is just this. Like,
yeah.
It's like all of the other stuff about like finding my passion and like my 5-year goal, that can come later. I just have to move out of my parents' house. Because like, how can you get your independence when you're living under the same roof and they're still treating you like children? And it's like, you're a grown adult, but obviously your parents are going to see you as their babies. I feel like that is what all parents do. You never really are treated as adults in their eyes. So yeah, definitely, yeah. Relatable to most readers, I imagine.
Well, I did have, like, even in the process of, like, you know, pitching my book and, like, having agents read it, there was some feedback that they didn't understand why Jasmine didn't have a goal or why Jasmine didn't have a sense of agency. And I'm like, I thought I explained all that in the book, like why she doesn't have a sense of agency. And again, the idea of like, well, most people, not everybody has a goal, right? Or they know what to do, right? During college, after college. And so I didn't think I would have to explain that part, but I guess in the sense of like, you know, writing a novel, like there has to be an arc or a story or something like that. And so that kind of made it hard for certain people to connect with the book. And so
that's weird, because I feel like that made her so relatable to me. And I think, I don't know, there is this archetype, I guess, of like Asian American recovering overachiever, right? That we've mentioned this, where, you know, our entire, the first 22 years of our life, is dedicated to school and studying, getting good grades, getting to a good school. But then what happens after, right? We've spent so much of our lives living to fulfill our parents' goals that we don't really think about our own goals, because there's just so much of that, like, I need to make my parents proud, that takes up in our brain space that I thought made Jasmine's experience super relatable.
I don't even think that it's, I want to meet my parents' expectations, because I feel like a lot of Asian Americans, they want that for themselves. You know, they want to be successful. They want to make sure that their parents' sacrifices are not in vain, even though they don't say it. Some parents don't say it to you verbally, but you feel it and you do want to, you know, do well. And yeah, I feel like so many high achieving Asian Americans, they burn themselves out because they put this pressure on themselves that, you know, is totally unnecessary. And I really like the fact that you included that for Jasmine's personality, because, you know, she studied really hard in college, and senior year she gets burned out, and pretty much, you know, her life kind of spirals from there. I don't want to spoil anything, but
yeah. And again, like, I think that's an experience that I've seen in people that I know and students that I've met, that I don't feel gets talked about a lot. And so that's why I really wanted to put that in this story too. I also want to say, because I remember I had a lot of students ask me this before. They're like, well, because I think they wanted that, like, validation that somebody else felt this way too. And so they always ask me when, like, Julie, did you ever feel this way? Did you struggle with your major or whatever? And I always had to, like, break the news of, I was like, no, I always knew what my major was. And I always knew I wanted to be a counselor, you know, but I remember, like, once I achieved, like, a certain, like milestone for myself, I was like, all right, I made it here. And then I thought, what do I do after this? Like, what's the next step in my career for me? And, like, I was like, oh, like, I'm experiencing it now, just much later in my life. And so, there's always going to be times when I feel like you're going to come across a crossroads where you're figuring out, like, is this it for me? I met my goal. Like, is this it? And, like, what do I do after it? Right. And so there's always times to reevaluate and figure out that next step.
Well, your next step was writing a novel. What made you want to write it? Like, what urged you to, you know, participate in, I think it was DV Pitt, right? That's where you started pitching. I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm a stalker. It's just every year, like, when DV Pitt or Pitch Wars happen, I just happen to be lurking on Twitter and I read all of these pitches and I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. Let's see if it, like, you know, makes it to publication. And a lot of those books do. And I get really happy because I'm like, I can finally read the story that I, you know, that was only 160 characters in in my perspective. So, yeah, like, how did you come about writing this book?
Yeah, so, you know, growing up, I always knew I liked writing. And I remember doing, like, an elementary school assignment. It was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I put writer, you know. And I had some really great teachers. Like, they submitted my work for me, and that was really nice. But at some point, like, by high school, you know, just kind of caught up in, like, college prep and all of that, it just kind of lost its way. And I just kind of, like, you know, shrugged it off, like, oh, that was just, like, a childhood dream, just never gonna, I didn't major in English, didn't major in writing. And I think part of that is, like, why I didn't pursue, like, writing then was because also, like, I just didn't know anybody who was a writer. Like, I just didn't, like, see that as, like, a career path for me. And so I pursued counseling and education, which I love. I've been doing it for over 10 years now. But when I decided to write the book, I had just, like, both my kids were really young, and I had just, like, spent a few years, like, taking care of them. And I came to a point in my life where I was like, I really want to do something that's just for me. And I always said, like, writing a novel was, like, on my bucket list. Like, it's just, like, this far off goal, lofty goal that I'm going to do someday. And then I don't know why, but at that time I just thought, well, why not today? Right. I'm just going to do it now. And so I started reading craft books. I started reading a lot more. I wasn't a very good reader before that. And then I started reading a lot more. And then I just started drafting something. And it was just going to be something that was going to be a file on my computer. I never thought I was going to pitch it. I set really small goals for myself. Like the first goal was like, well, let's see if I could even make it to 60,000 words, right? And so I wrote up to 60,000 words. And then I realized, oh, I actually need to write a lot more to make it novel length. And so then I wrote a little bit more. And then when it was all said and done, at some point I discovered Pitch Wars. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to submit it to Pitch Wars. I'd love to have a mentor because I don't know what I'm doing. I put in my application for Pitch Wars. But, you know, at some point I just realized like, oh, I'm probably not going to get selected. And then DV Pit was happening like the week after or something like that. And so it was just like, why not? I'm just going to do it. Let's just try it out and see what happens. I wrote my pitch. I started kind of like querying like just like five agents. So it was just like a test batch of sorts. And then my DV Pit pitch like got a good amount of agent interest. So I thought, oh, maybe I really have something here. And so, and that's how I ended up getting connected to my agent. And so that was kind of like the whole journey. And so everything has been really unexpected. I'm really thrilled, but also like learning as I'm going, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you are by all accounts, a full-fledged independent adult. So I'm curious, how did your parents react to you becoming like a creative author?
Yeah. My parents were thrilled. Like my dad used to be used to write as a hobby. He used to write scripts actually.
Oh wow.
He loves like words. Like he'll find any scrap of paper and like write a character and tell me like why this character means what it means, how many different ways you can use this one character. And so, like, he was thrilled. Like, he was just like, wow. Well, also, first of all, I didn't tell them until I landed my agent, I think. And so I waited until, like, there was something, like, I could tell them. So it wasn't just like, oh, this is my project. It was like, by the way, I wrote a book and I have an agent now. And so it really, like, surprised them in a good way. Of course, my mom was like, well, how much money are you going to make and all of that? And all of that, which of course I didn't even know for myself. I was like, I don't really know how publishing works. They were thrilled. And then I remember like showing them like the actual printed copy. They were so excited. And like they went to Barnes & Noble and took pictures. And so it was really nice.
That's so sweet. Yeah. I'm just thinking about like my parents, because I did major in writing, and for them it was just like, wait, you write? Like, when did you have time? And and like for me, it was like I applied for a writing major the day before the deadline for sending in your portfolio, and like it was just like why not? I mean, like I can write this in 24 hours. I don't recommend it. If you're a prospective college student and you want to be a writer, don't write your college portfolio the night before. It's not advised. But yeah, like we said earlier, there's a strategy to breaking the news to your parents. It was like, surprise, I applied for a writing major. Like, you didn't know about that, but it's too late. I already applied.
Yeah. And I mean, I waited to tell my parents because like, you know, if I told them earlier, they would just be like, well, why? Why are you spending your time doing that? Like, you know, and I think being able to say like, oh, I have my agent now, like, or like I finished it. And then it feels much more concrete and like tangible to explain to them like what that all means. I remember even reading like stories about that from other people. I think like the owners of like Seven Leaves, like they didn't tell their parents that they were gonna create like a tea shop because they all were like engineers or like successful in like other jobs. And now we have seven leaves.
Yeah. So how did it feel when you went into your local bookstore and saw that your novel was on the shelves?
Oh, it's just totally surreal. I mean, part of that was also because like my release date got pushed. And so yeah. I was just kind of like waiting, like, when is it going to be there? And so when I finally saw it, I was just like, it was like a mix of like pride, but also like relief because it was there. And I was just so nervous, like asking like someone, like a bookseller there, like, can I sign my books? And they were so like, they congratulated me. They brought out all their copies that were in stock. And so it was really nice. And I had my kids there with me, and I think to them, it just seems almost like normal. And they're like, oh, look, mom, there's your book. Like, do you want to take it home? I'm like, no, this has to stay here. Someone has to buy it. and they keep me humble because they're like, are we done taking pictures now? Like, can we go look at other stuff? And I'm like, yeah, sure. But yeah, it was really exciting. And again, I'm just so like surprised by this whole thing, like that this thing that I've always kind of thought about in like the back of my mind is like, actually happened. And so I'm so glad I kind of took the chance and like put out my work out there, because I mean that was really the thing that kept me from writing in my 20s. I was like, I don't think I ever want to show anybody my writing. Because I, you know, as a college counselor, like I planned lots of career events, and I've heard other writers say like, oh yeah, you have to share your work and like get writing friends and like critique each other and all that. And
what do you mean that I have to socialize? What do you mean?
Hearing them say that like terrified me. I was like, no, I don't want to share any of my work with anybody. And I think the nice thing about starting this project now in my 30s is that I had a little bit more confidence to say like, okay, yeah, like I can share my work because that's part of the process, right? But also to have enough distance and perspective to be able to craft the story that the way that it is now. Like if I tried to write something like The Donut Trap in my 20s, it would not be the way that it is. It just, I don't even know what it would look like. It would look like a very long, like Zanga page, maybe.
Oh my God, Zanga. Wow, that brings me back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now you are a published author with a second book in the works.
Yeah.
Coming out summer of next year, right?
Yes. So my next book is called Circling Back to You. It is a workplace rom-com between two colleagues who have a really like close-knit relationship. It's set partly in San Francisco and partly in LA, specifically San Gabriel. I'm trying to hit all of San Gabriel Valley in my books. But it was really fun to write. It definitely has a stronger or more prominent, I should say, romance arc than the Donut Trap. And so I think it'll be really fun. I wrote it mostly in summer of 2020. And
oh,
so,
God.
Yeah. And then I did a big revision just this past summer. And so, a lot of work went into it. I think part of writing in the pandemic, it was really hard for one, but two, it was one of those things where like, well, if I'm going to set aside time to write a project in this time that's just so like uncertain and, you know, wild, like I just have, this project just has to be fun, right? And so, I feel like I try to incorporate like a lot more jokes, a lot more humor. A lot of my critique partners said it was really funny. So and my editor said that too. So that's basically what I'm going with that. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, San Gabriel is my hometown, so now I'm honor bound to read this novel when it comes out.
Yeah, I totally feel that with like, you know, being honor bound to like whenever a book mentions like your hometown, it's like, yeah, let's see if they got it right. There's
oh no,
it's a lot of pressure.
Marvin's gonna be reading my book and be like, that's not what San Gabriel's like.
I mean, you did nail the setting in Donut Trap, so I have faith in you. And yeah, I mean, we're winding down to the end of our conversation. Rira, do you have any last questions for Julie?
Well, I don't have any questions, but I like we said earlier, I really appreciated the different perspectives that you put in like the Asian American experience. I thought the romance was super cute. Like, I love the fact that she called Alex like the window guy, and just like that's adorable. I love it, and I just love their chemistry. It was a really fun read, but also I just related to it a lot, and I hope a lot of people enjoy it as well. But where can our listeners find you so they can learn more about the Donut Trap?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Julie2, and I'm also on Instagram at Julie2Writes. And I also have a newsletter that readers can subscribe to on my website, which is www.julie2.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Julie, for joining us on Books and Bulba. Congratulations on the launch of your debut novel, and, you know, good luck on the road to launching your next one.
Thank you so much. It's so fun to chat with you guys today.
And that was our chat with Julie Tu, the author of The Donut Trap, available now at bookstores everywhere. Yeah, what a fun conversation.
Yes, yes. And I forgot to mention this in our conversation, but The Donut Trap, what a great title.
You know, at first I thought it was going to be like a parent trap type of thing, but no, it's literally the trap that the main character Jasmine feels that she is in, because she is surrounded by donuts every day.
And also, she lives with her parents, so it's like, how do I escape?
Yeah, if you're interested in the book, you can purchase it now at Booksellers Everywhere, and also at our Books and Bulba bookshop, where we have a list of all the books of the author interviews that we've done. So support the book, support Julie, and also support our podcast and local bookstores at the same time.
Yes, and you know, for those who want to read our December pick, we will be reading She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan, which is an Asian-inspired fantasy pitched as Mulan meets the Song of Achilles. It is a very long book, so we are actually reading it for December and January so that we have extra time to finish the book. Because also holidays, I know people have things to do.
Yeah.
I have things to do.
Yeah, and if you've already read the book and have some thoughts, please let us know on our Goodreads forum. We always love to hear the thoughts of our readers. But with that, I guess that'll do it for this episode of Books and Bulba. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Happy holidays, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Bulba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandbulba, and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandbulba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Bulba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandbulba.com. Books and Bulba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, I'm Phil Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We've got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation,
the good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallsbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.